Mauricio's going to hit one in the right. That's going to get down. Fielded on a hop, but the 8-9 hitters for the Mets, back-to-back singles to get him going here in the third.
One of the biggest reasons why baseball is the best, right? As Sarah Langs would say, bottom of the order, kicking butt, top of the order, 0-for-8 3 Ks.
That's hit hard, fair ball. It will ricochet off the wall. That's an advantage. Yastrzemski falls in right field, and back-to-back doubles for the New York Mets. RBI from Mauricio, as Mauricio gives the Mets the lead. Giants 2.5 back in the wild card race, and the Mets game clear of the Phillies in the National League East. Those two teams still have 6 more meetings as this ball is sailed towards the kayaks. And he said fair ball, and it is a fair ball. We had a splash hit. Get on it, kayaks. Mauricio stood there, and he pulled a Carlton Fisk just on the right field line saying fair ball. Mauricio, a single, a double, and a splash homer. Mauricio the other way. He's off and running, and that is a fair ball. Ronnie Mauricio, 4-for-4 tonight. 2 doubles, a single, and a splash home run.
That's impressive stuff. 4th pitch of the night that Soto has swung at. Seen 15 so far, and 5 of them have been called strikes.
Soto the other way. This one is deep. Going back is Ramos. Soto sends one to left, and a homer for the Mets to put him on top. Mr. Met here, well, you go to homer, we come in the booth, and you go yard.
Wow.
Juan Soto goes left field homer. And the Mets sweep the series.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, July the 28th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody. Early morning here. Getting our week starting at the Talking Mets Podcast. Late Sunday night baseball game. That's why I'm coming to you here on Monday morning. Mets, big weekend series out in the Bay Area, out in San Francisco. Sweep the Giants, big win on Sunday night baseball. A little stressful save there on Saturday night. The gloves doing their work. And of course, the Mets getting their trip off to a great start on Friday night. And putting the Giants in a precarious position, almost maybe making the Giants sellers in just 72 hours. We'll get into the Mets weekend, especially on Sunday night. That was a good primer for what the Mets are going to need to do as we get deeper into the season and into October. Tons of rumors on Sunday floating around about Mark Vientos and Luis Robert Jr. We'll talk about that. And we're down to the nitty-gritty. Just another 3 or 4 days here before the trade deadline. And what will David Stearns be able to import in terms of bullpen? Are the Mets cooking of something bigger with Miami? Who does Talking Mets Podcast and Mike Silva like out of the bullpen? What's realistic? How are the Mets going to handle all these prospects that they have? This is a big week for the Mets. This is a big week for the Mets at the big league level. This is a big week for the Mets at the front office level. And then by Friday, it'll be, that's it. The roster's set. Go get it time. The third phase of our season, how we break it down here at the Talking Mets Podcast. So a lot to talk about here this morning, kicking your week off, and hoping also, I'm trying to think about maybe something to do the day of the trade deadline. Going to try to figure that out, so we'll get to that too. So anyway, let's talk about the team and the situation at hand. So the Mets go in to San Francisco, and you guys who have been listening know I've been very down on this club the last couple of weeks. I was, you know, it's funny, over the, you know, from about June 12th-ish to, you know, last Sunday, about a month, a little more than a month, 5 weeks, we saw a lot of bad baseball, a lot of frustrating baseball, and I think the Mets and how they play some of the bottom part of their roster, particularly the bullpen, how they've been playing out the young kids on the offensive side, they've been playing out the fungible relievers, the 4A relievers. It really finally caught up to them, and you saw a lot of bad baseball, and you saw a team that right after they had swept the Nats was on the verge of maybe really taking off and putting the NL East in a position where, not maybe putting it away, but where it was theirs to kind of manage the rest of the season. And, you know, bad series against the Phils and the Braves and frustrating losses throughout the 4 or 5 week period put them in a situation where at this time last week, and I said this was a big week of baseball, the Mets were staring at the abyss of the muck, the same muck that San Diego's in, that San Francisco's in. And I wasn't ever in the camp that they were sellers. I know that that was what was being floated around just 7 days ago. But I said, is this a team worth investing in? And at some point, you have to have that honest question, because the Mets have a lot of resources. They have a lot of minor league resources. They have a lot of financial resources. And, you know, a decision you make this year, just like they did during Steve Cohen's first full season, where Zach Scott traded Pete Carr-Armstrong to bring in a reinforcement, to go for it for, with the team that was in the muck. The bar for making the playoffs was low that season. The NL East bar was low with a lot of struggling teams. That could come back to bite you down the road. I mean, how good would Pete Crow-Armstrong look in this lineup? And wow, what, you know, imagine what the Mets' position they'd be in center field. But that's not the situation. That's not the reality now. Crow-Armstrong is in Chicago for a team that's at the top of the league, top, you know, and very well could win their division. So this is a tricky spot that the Mets are in. And let's face it, as we've looked at the week that just passed, on Monday night with the Mets down 3 runs against Anaheim, a bad start by Kodai Senga, second start off the injured list. You had to really, if you had listened to my show or going to listen to my show, at that point in the sixth or seventh inning, you didn't feel great. You didn't feel great about this club. You knew, and the Angels are a plucky team, but they're a team going nowhere. Citi Field, the place where the Mets have been dominant. I remember I was in the car. I was out and about that night driving home. I actually was listening to the ball game during the rally when Soto tied it with his base hit up the middle. But it was at a point where I was like, you know, I don't know where this season's going. And all of a sudden, the Mets rally. They get the win. They get a big win the following night with Stanek getting Mike Trout out, a scary at-bat. They sweep the Angels with a very generous call by the home crew, home plate umpire on the business person special. And then they go out to San Francisco, and I said the road has been their kryptonite all year, even when they were playing well. And they go out, and they have your perfect road win on Friday, putting them away, playing from ahead, tacking on runs. They get a little help with the gloves and Pete Alonso on Saturday. Diaz, not his best stuff. You know who the biggest assist goes to is the right field wall in San Francisco. That ridiculous right field wall, because Diaz gives a home run up in 29 out of 30 parks, including his own field, the Citi Field. And then last night is the primer of how you're going to have to win big games down the stretch and into the postseason. It's the blueprint. Yeah, last night is the blueprint, and it's particularly the Mets blueprint because what do they have, about 31 starts where the pitcher has gone into the sixth inning. Forget the seventh inning. And Peterson is the only guy, I think he's like half of them or maybe 45% of them, that you could really say going into a start, yeah, that guy's going to give you 18 to 21 outs. And that means you're going to have to get 12 outs out of your bullpen every night for the most part, or at least 70%, 75% of the time. Not sure that's going to change. I don't think the deadline's going to change that. We'll see. We'll get into that in a little bit. And, you know, that was what you saw yesterday. Now, what a difference. And I talked about Gregory Soto over Beyond the Mic on Friday. There's a lot of things not to like about him. He's not a reliever that you could trust against big right-handed batters. He does walk few too many. But I think in the right situation, in a lower leverage situation, not a closer spot, not a setup spot, but a spot where, you know, no matter where the inning is, he is your guy that's going to go out and get left-handed hitters out, and he does that extremely well throughout his career. That's a really good acquisition, and it didn't cost you in a sense where you gave up a sure thing prospect. Sure, you have one of the arms they gave up. Both of them were good arms. One of them was an intriguing arm, an emerging arm. But you got to give up something to get something. But now you see the bullpen take shape where it's much more professional, much better. 2 weeks ago, I don't know if the Mets could win that ballgame. I really don't. I think that inning that Soto had against the Devers of the world and whatnot, I don't think they can navigate that. So, you know, here we are, here where the Mets are. They come out 7 in a row. And I think a combination, and I don't know if you could point to just one thing. You know, maybe it was a little bit of luck with, you know, how things played out in the game against Anaheim on Monday with some bad fielding. You know, maybe it was the Soto slide that I really think was huge on Sunday a week ago, because that would have been a disastrous series. I think we'd be, you know, we would have talked about it last week, and not that my intro or anything would have changed much here. You know, there's a couple of plays that have happened over the week while they were struggling, things that, you know, you just have to do as a winning team to get out of it. And now they're in a position, they go into San Diego, and they're in a really good position. At the worst, they're going to have a 500 trip. And I think this team could go in, maybe win 2 out of 3, even if they lose the series. They walk away with a 4-2 road trip. Let's see what they're made of. But I think, you know, you're going to say, Mike, you flip-flopped. A week ago, you said they weren't a playoff team. A week ago, you said you weren't sure they were going anywhere. They still had to show me a lot. And I'll tell you what, this is a big week for the front office, because I still don't know with the current bullpen if they can navigate. And I think they can make the playoffs now. But you saw how bad things got for a month. This team has shown that with their bullpen, you know, with some of the inconsistencies of the bottom part of the order that saved the day last night, with how much they rely on the top four guys and how streaky at times all those guys are, how Lindor is a streaky hitter and Soto's a streaky hitter and Alonso's a streaky hitter. And to a certain degree, Nimmo is maybe not quite as streaky, but very streaky, that when those guys go into the goose egg column, a team has trouble scoring. Team has struggled to run into the scoring position. Clearly, the team on the bridge to Diaz has struggled. And let's face it, Diaz has been shaky the last few times out. His command has been off, going back to the matinee against the Angels. He was dominant in the first game against the Angels. And he was shaky against the Reds a week ago. So Diaz is going through one of those command and control patches, which he's going to do. I mean, you know that that's what you get out of him. And, you know, you got to be able to navigate where he doesn't have to be perfect. And right, going into this week, the way this bullpen was, if you hand that ball to Diaz, you need that save, because you don't know tomorrow if he's even going to get to the point to get the save. So things have changed. They showed a lot of courage this week. They showed that they want this thing. They showed that things are turning in the right direction. And they're putting themselves in a position with a solid series in San Diego and a solid week at the front office, where as we head to the go-get-it-done phase, you feel good about this team as a tournament team. Now, whether they're going to be a bye team, whether they're going to be an in-the-muck wildcard team, whatever that looks like, what the muck is of the three. And I think the Mets are in a position where they're almost about to kind of guarantee, not guarantee, but put a high probabilistic outcome around them being a playoff team regardless. Because they're on pace to win about 93, 94 games. That even might, that certainly puts you in the division conversation. It doesn't guarantee you division, because I think the Phillies, with their pitching, with their veteran presence, with the fact that I think Dombrowski is going to go and he would mortgage the farm to try to get it done this year. I don't see them going away. But when you start to look at the teams like Cincinnati and San Francisco that are fighting it out there, and then, of course, you have San Diego as well. I mean, right now, San Diego's the team that has to kind of, you know, fight their way a little bit. And, you know, they may be on the outside looking in. So as I said from the start, there's going to be a good team on the outside looking in. But, you know, you don't want that to be where you're in the muck and you have to win on the last day of the season like last year. This is actually a pretty big series, too, for San Diego, because I think if the Mets put a hurting on them and the Phillies with playing Chicago hold serve, and you know how good the Cubs and the Brewers are playing, you know, they're staring down the barrel of, you know, five or six games back of the final wild card. I know it's August 1st. I mean, the Cardinals many years ago came back from a double-digit deficit to get into the playoffs in August. So it can happen. And Mets fans all know too well about big leads and how even with the odds that these leads can't be blown, they can be blown. You know, but the Mets are in a great spot here. And then you look at last night and all the things that happened, and even on the weekend, but particularly last night where you get the big hit from Soto. That's what you paid in December for, Soto to get that big hit. You get the kids in the bottom of the lineup. How much better Alvarez looks, where he looks calmer at the plate. And he's, you know, they talked about on the broadcast his swing. He's not over swinging. He's in a way, he's not actively going the other way, but he's just going with what they give him. And his power is on display, you know, in a big way. And Mauricio starting to show his talent and showing that he belongs in the big leagues. For a while there, I didn't think against good big league pitching that he could get it done. I mean, yesterday, that was some good big league pitching. The Giants, I wonder if they're sellers. They got a couple of bullpen arms, including Joey Lucchesi. Who would have thought it? They're actually pretty good. I mean, Rodriguez is a solid arm with some good stuff. Rogers is pretty good. So they have a couple of arms over there. So you get that, and you got to love what McNeil has been giving you in center field or wherever he plays. You got to like, if you see the bottom of the order, even Vientos, who we'll talk about in a little bit, with the big hit on Saturday night, I'm not expecting them to be stars. That's not what we need out of them. It's not what the Mets need out of them. Be competent. Play within the bottom of the order, you offensive players you are. And if it means you're going to give big-time offensive performances like Mauricio did, that's great. If it means you could actually make contact, move runners over in spots where you need it, that's what they need. Can you get a sacrifice fly with a runner on third and less than two outs? That's what they need. They're not expected to be the hub. The hub is Nimmo, Lindor, Soto, Alonso. A little bit on the peripheral of McNeil. That's not what you even need Alvarez, Mauricio, and Beatty to be. I mean, Acuna is a pinch runner and a defensive backup. You're not asking him more than that. I mean, they're not asking at this point. Mendoza and Stearns are not asking a lot out of these guys. They're asking them to be component parts of this club. And they did it this weekend. And that's all I think. Well, my criticism and my anger and my frustration with these guys has not been that they're not evolving into David Wright or Mike Piazza or Jose Reyes. That is very hard and unfair. That evolves. Pete Alonso came up, was really good his first year, but it took him a little bit, maybe 2 years, before you knew, okay, this guy is here to stay and going to be an elite hitter. I mean, that first year, then he struggled during the pandemic season, and then he came back as he evolved as a hitter early in his career, and as they adjusted to him, the league, in 2021, and then he showed you that who he was. I'm not expecting that. I'm expecting them to contribute on a competent level, and that's what you saw. And then last night you saw, you know, the team, I don't think they got a great outing by Senga. He was rusty. He admitted it. He's very honest about his performance. And he was very honest about some of the non-competitive pitches he threw up there. But he get through five with three runs for Senga. 2 to 3 runs, 5 innings, what most of these guys on this staff is going to give you. And then you hand it off to the bullpen. And that's where it is so much better. Just one acquisition, Soto, moves everybody into a slot where you don't have to use Brooks Raley in the seventh inning against the lefties. You could hold him because he's a crossover guy. He get both sides out. Reed Garrett now, back-to-back outings, looking not too bad, looking really good. You could utilize him, especially if you get a big setup arm. Maybe use him in, you know, seventh inning, sixth inning, you know, maybe a little bit earlier than the high-leverage eighth inning. And then, of course, you hand it to Diaz, and Diaz goes out there, makes you sweat, hits a batter, you know, walks a couple of guys. He too had some pitches that were not competitive, but when it, you know, push came to shove, and he did this when he got into trouble in the clincher against the Phils, when he struck out Schwarber. Hitters like Adames, hitters like Chapman, Dom is, you know, both power guys. Chapman had a couple of home runs. You know, he knows how to go out there and harness his command and control and just blow guys away. At the end of the day, if his fastball is 98, 99 with movement, it's going to be tough to hit. And it was interesting how slider happy he got on Saturday night, and his slider was a hanger, where, I mean, I was convinced that Lee's ball was going to go out. And of course, the line drive by Bailey, where, you know, Alonzo's trying to try out for the Knicks there. So, you know, you have all the components there. And even without a positional acquisition, and I really think, unless the Mets are going to rip from some of their young duplication, the Vientos-Mauricio situation, they're going to rip from those guys. And I'm skeptical whether they will. That was what my recommendation was, but that doesn't mean that's what they're going to do. I think you kind of have a good enough defensive team at premium positions, you know, particularly with Taylor in center field, with Lindor at short, with whether you have McNeil, even Beatty's not bad at second. I think you have enough on both sides of the ball to get enough runs. And I've said from the start, this team in the games, whether it be now, big games in August and September, or October in the postseason, they're going to be decided, you know, in the ninth inning. So it's all going to come down to Diaz. At the end of the day, in a close game, in any big spot, Diaz is going. The Mets are going to live and die with Diaz as they have since 2019. Now, whether or not he opts out and this is the last hurrah, I'm not here to say that. But that's what this is going to come down to. But even to get to that point, they're going to need competent relievers that can navigate. You know, you face the Dodgers in a short series. You're going to need to get Ohtani and Freeman out four times. Two times by the starter, one time by a middle reliever, maybe two, depending on the score. And then you're potentially your closer. And right now, they're not there yet. But Soto moves guys in better spots. And yes, against lefties, I do have some faith that Soto could get some of these big hitters out. I mean, he had Devers tap back to the mound on him last night. That's a tough guy to get out in a big spot. So you saw the blueprint in front of you. You have to feel better. The Mets have had some big plays this week. The Mets took this week, which in this world of baseball, of three wild cards, 1 week means a ton. And you heard it on, you know, the reports over the weekend that the Mets were monitoring the market because 72 hours of baseball and how your team plays in just one series leading up to the July 31st deadline could be the difference between being two games out, five games out, or like the Giants now, pseudo sellers. One bad weekend against the Mets. And think about it. Okay, they get blown out Friday. All right, it happens. They lose a heartbreaker on Saturday, a game that they, with BABIP luck, win. And then last night, you know, maybe a few things go their way. You know, Domus hits one in the gap. They take two out of three. All of a sudden, it's like, whew. You know, they're still in it. Now they're looking at it. You know, I'm even bringing it up. Can the Mets pluck a reliever out of them? That's how wacky this thing gets. But the Mets showed you a lot. They head into San Diego now. Now the question is, you know, what are they going to do with the deadline? And there's a couple of things on the table. One, you hear rumors about them upgrading center field, sliding Taylor more to a backup role. Luis Robert Jr. is the name. And right now, that's the only offensive side name. And Stearns has said it during his press conference earlier in the week, which we talked about on a show leading into the weekend. Stearns has said it. You know, they're looking at center field. I don't think third base is something they're looking at. And I don't think they're looking at anywhere else on the field. I mean, they feel like they have their guys. It's going to be the bullpen. Whether or not that bullpen arm could be a second closer, a controllable second closer, a reliever in the right-handed mold of what you got with Soto, that remains to be seen. I think it'll be more in the reliever in the right-handed mold of Soto. I have a couple of ideas. There is some smoke around the Miami Marlins. You're hearing some scuttlebutt between the Marlins scouting the Mets system a lot and the Mets working on some things. Is that Alcantara? Is that one of the bullpen arms? You know, we'll see about that. But it will be interesting. It will be an interesting week because not only do you have to watch what the Mets are going to do, in a way, this whole thing transpires as, you know the Cubs in Milwaukee may reinforce, but does a team like San Diego, who's on the periphery now, reinforce and put themselves from paper in a better spot to jump right back in and make this, hey, somebody who's going to have a good record, somebody who's going to have a painfully good record might be knocked out. Similar to what happened in Arizona last year and happened with at the end of the season when you knew a good team was going to be out. The fact that Arizona and Atlanta have taken a step back and are sellers turns, you know, makes this a lot easier. But this is an extremely competitive league, and it still is a competitive league even as we head into the July 31st deadline. So let's, you know, there it is. The primers in front of you. How the Mets have to play. The way they played on the road, the way they handled, the fact that this was on the road in, you know, not a raucous, but a ballpark that's tough to play. I mean, the ball dies out there, wacky stuff happens. Historically, the Mets never play well in San Francisco. The fact that they were able to do that, the way they won Sunday Night Baseball, they navigated adversity, they got big plays from unlikely sources. That's how you win and win a championship. That's how you win a division. That's how you make the playoffs. The Mets are doing all those things. We're having a way different conversation this year. There's no more yolk. There's no more crazy plays happening or, you know, the cloud over the head. The Mets are just going to have to compete and win and execute like every other contending ball club. And they did that. And even Mendoza talked about it in the postgame. Winning on the road is the last piece that this team has yet to show any ability to do since day one. And the fact that they start this first road trip after the All-Star break on a high note in a tough place to play against a quality opponent against a really good pitcher on Friday in Logan Webb. And Robbie Ray is pretty good on Saturday. I mean, those were not easy matchups for the Mets. Those are good pitchers. Good pitchers. Says a lot. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Let's start getting into trade line fun. Couple of segments to go. First off, a lot of talk on X yesterday about Mark Vientos, Luis Robert Jr. I advocated if the trade came down to Vientos for Luis Robert, I said the Mets should take the risk. A lot of people got angry at me. I wrote about it over at Beyond the Mic. I'll expand upon it here today on the show. And then to wrap up on the way out, what exactly can the Mets realistically do to lock down the eighth inning? Right now, it's about the eighth inning. Yeah, Reed Garrett and Brooks Raley got out of it. In that high leverage leading to Diaz situation, I'd like them to have a little bit of a higher level closer. I also like to be able to give Diaz is out today. Who's going to close? If it's Ryan Stanek, that doesn't make me feel great. I know he got out of the a couple of saves, you know, the Trout situation and what have you. But you have to realize that, you know, that doesn't always happen, and that's a shaky spot, and that's a probabilistic for a heartbreak spot. So can they bring in, is it realistic to bring in somebody who can also back up and close for Diaz? I have some ideas. We'll talk about that more right after this.
And Vientos drills one down the left field line. That's going to go to the corner, and the Mets will take the lead. Soto and Marte score. Vientos to second with a two-run double, and the Mets flip the script. It's 2-1 New York.
All right, we're back. So the internet almost broke, at least Mets Twitter almost broke yesterday leading up to the ball game. Report came out. Now it's Bob Nightingale who says a lot of stuff, and I'm not going back on what I said on, Friday morning leading up to the road trip where I talked a little bit about some of the rumors and said, hey, everybody likes to use educated speculation and say, hey, this is a proposed trade. I mean, Alex Cora even put it out on X. Alex Cora was talking about how he tells his players, hey, don't listen to some of these trade rumors. They're made up because I work for ESPN and I know what goes on in the back end. So, you know, everybody likes to, and you could do it in a journalistically responsible way, like you use educated speculation. Something that I could do here today without any credential, without any, you know, call letters behind me. But that's not what this is about. So the conversation started where Nightingale said that the White Sox will only trade Luis Robert with the Mets if Mark Vientos is in the deal. So let's just use that in a vacuum. You got a guy that's been struggling the last couple of years, a Luis Robert Jr., gold glove type center fielder, has immense talent, power, tremendous 2023. You know, then you have Mark Vientos, Swaggy V, like the Mets fans like to call him. And you look at him and you remember the OMG Grimace run. You remember what he did against the Dodgers in the postseason. And obviously his home runs against the Phillies that tied the game, even though they had lost that game. And you kind of have, you know, these fond memories. And it's hard for Mets fans to fathom with Vientos trading him away. But let's be frank, let's be honest. Vientos has had an awful year. There is a lot of duplication right now on the roster. I think Stearns has to really decide between Beatty, Mauricio, and Vientos what he's going to do. Mauricio and Beatty have shown versatility. I mean, one of the biggest surprises of this year is how Beatty has turned himself into a versatile player, where he's a passable second baseman. I don't think he's great. I think McNeil is certainly better. And you're not going to want him in a big spot in the ninth inning, maybe be that guy if you want to shore up the defense. But he won't kill you. And that brings a whole different dimension to his game. Mauricio could play three positions. He's also a shortstop. If you ever have to sit Lindor like you did a year ago when he hurt his back, he could slide right in. Better bat than Acuna. He's been really good at third. Our friend David Mills, our friend that does a lot of the prospect rankings and reviews and you know, calls around the league and talks to scouts and what have you. There's a guy that has been big on Mauricio for a while. You know, so Mills has done his part and contributed to this show and has been bigger than I have been on Mauricio. You know, he's been writing about it for a year, how Mauricio could be. Even talked about Mauricio at first base as a Pete Alonso replacement. So when you look at that duplication, and then you've got other corner guys, Ryan Clifford, Jacob Reimer, Jesus Baez, guys like that coming up in the minor leagues, I know that they may not be ready next year, you have a lot of the same type of players. And you have to be honest with yourself with Vientos. If Pete Alonso, and I don't think it's a shoe-in, but if Pete Alonso signs a long-term contract, the next 3 or 4 years, first base is locked. Now, there's always the DH spot, and that's a possibility for Vientos. So let's keep that there. But if you have these other guys, and if Vientos, he can play third, but he's really regressed to third base. He went from passable last year to downright bad this year. Not Rafael Devers' first base bad, but bad. Where does he really fit into this whole thing? And if you look at the numbers, I mean, if you put player A in front of Vientos, and I told you, player A, bad defensively, offense only, slugging percentage of .358, OPS plus of 84, not hitting the ball nearly as hard as he had in the past, strikes out a ton. Now, what would you say? Would you say that player is untouchable? Probably not. And the reaction I got from the Mets community, the emails, the tweets of outrage, like, you know, he's controllable. You know, Roberts has a rental, which he's not. The Mets could control him for 2 years. They just got to pick up the option. It's amazing. I mean, if you go to his Baseball Savant page of this year, there ain't a lot of red. There ain't a lot of red at all. And this is a guy that, you know, if you go back, I'm just bringing it up here right now. 23, here we go, 2024, let's bring it up. I mean, his exit velocity, his barrel rate, his hard hit rate, everything last year was quality. Now, he's still, and this was always the concern I had, he was still a guy that struck out a lot. He's a guy that chased. And yes, he had big at-bats in the postseason, but let's remember, against the big reliever, and this was always the concern with Vientos coming up, can he hit velocity of good pitching? Can he hit good pitching? That was always the knock on him in the defense, of course. And Devin Williams, if you remember that ninth inning where Pete hit the home run, Devin Williams pretty much disposed of him. He was the one hitter he disposed of easily in that inning. So, you know, there's always been in the back of my mind, you know, is Vientos sustainable? And that doesn't take away what he did last year. But I hear Andy Martino talk about him carrying clubs, and I don't see that. He did a good job last year. I wouldn't say he carried the club last year. He was very consistent offensively last summer, no doubt. But we're talking about, and I don't want to compare him to Dom Smith, because he had a more of an impact on the Mets than Dom Smith ever had as a hitter. But, you know, like Dom Smith, who had this small sample size of success, and sure, everybody's biting into the draft status and the first-round potential, although Vientos was not at that Dom Smith first-round pick level. You hold on to these things, well, Mets fans hold on to these things in a way where, at some point, last year's in the history books. Nothing that happened last year matters anymore. And I understand that Vientos has control. He's a second-round pick in 2017. He's not chopped liver. But when you start to really think about it, his value's not going to get better if he doesn't play well. The odds of him turning this around, all right, for a month, I don't think he's going to get enough playing time. He's going to be a guy that they're going to spot in maybe against lefties. That's what you're going to see him do going forward. Tough righty's not hitting the field. He's not playing. Unless there's an injury of some sorts. And you start to look at that. You start to look at the duplication. You look at what's coming up behind. You know you have to give up something to get something. Center field right now in the organization is something that, you know, may be a soft spot. I don't have a problem with McNeil out there. I think he's okay defensively. I think he's not the kind of defensive center fielder that Stearns would want. I mean, this is a guy that had Lorenzo Cain in Milwaukee, you know, brought in Harrison Bader, has had Tyrone Taylor, has been comfortable despite the bat being turned to dust with Tyrone Taylor with a good glove out there. Stearns is a guy, and I believe in this, that wants defense up the middle. He wants a strong shortstop. He wants a strong center fielder. He wants a strong second baseman. And he will sacrifice, in my opinion, some offense there to make that happen. Not all, you know, you don't want to have a bunch of backup gloves, but he'll want to sacrifice that. And Luis Robert, who I've been against, Luis Robert Jr., who I've been against, who I've been if you're telling me it's not going to take mega prospect capital, top 10 prospect capital, to bring in somebody that is a cost if you keep him, not a great cost, and I'll get to that because I saw some people say, oh, he's way overpaid. He's not. For a guy that may need a change of scenery, is one-dimensional, and probably doesn't fit when you compare him to the rest of the young players. I mean, it's not a no-brainer because there's a risk, but I don't know why this is such a crazy idea. The more I think about Vientos for Luis Robert Jr., the more I like it. Because both of these guys could be busts in their new surroundings, or both of these guys could blossom. I mean, for $20 million a year, for $40 million, you could get a guy, Luis Robert Jr., who just 2 years ago, and it's not like he did it like Vientos for a few months, for the first 3 years of his career, and you, all right, you want me to take, yeah, let's take out COVID here. For the first 3 years of his career, this is a guy that, had his OPS plus was 154 in 21, 110 in 22, 130 in 2023. That's what it was. I mean, he had 38 homers in 23. He had Gold Glove level defense since he came into the league. He actually won the Gold Glove in the pandemic season. Let's see here. Those 3 seasons, he averaged an 842 OPS, 287 batting average. And about, you know, 21 home runs a season. Hello, that's Pete Crow Armstrong. That's Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be him going forward. But, Jose, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong, what he's doing this year, you know, that's what Luis Robert Jr. did in 2023. Hello, guys. Hello. Am I missing something? And similarly, he doesn't necessarily walk all that much. He strikes out a ton. There's a lot of what Vientos that you don't like in his game. Now, what I don't know about Luis Robert Jr. is I don't know the work ethic. I know the White Sox, there's been talk of them having a toxic clubhouse. I think it was Lance Lynn came out and talked a little bit about it on a podcast earlier this year. Don't quote me on Lynn. It was somebody who played for that team last year. Maybe the burden of expectations caught up with him. I mean, this is a guy, you know, big prospect coming out of Chicago, you know, signed a 6-year contract earlier in his career. So there's a lot of things we don't know. We don't know how his mechanics of his swing, the league adjusting to him. But it's not like he had one season. I mean, this is a guy that for the first, you know, 3 years of his career plus was really good. And then you play for this historically bad team and things like that happen. You have, and we talked about this, remember, talked about this with the early 90s Mets and guys like Ryan Thompson. Ryan Thompson actually talked about this on a podcast a few years back, how being in that environment with veterans that were just collecting paychecks and didn't care in a toxic clubhouse and crazy stuff happening and the losing and the lack of focus and direction on just good baseball, that has a huge impact on a young player in a negative way. Jeff Kent had to get out of New York to blossom. Now, maybe he never would have been a New York guy, and things, you know, maybe if he was around in the late 90s with the Piazza Mets, certainly things could have been different. But he had to get out because he came into a situation where he couldn't harness himself and his potential and his talents 100%. So I think this is a worthwhile risk. Now, here's a bad scenario. Mets trade Vientos. He goes on to be a consistent Pete Alonso light in Chicago. And you're like, damn, that could have been a controllable bat that the Mets could have put at the DH spot and maybe slapped into third base or first base occasionally. You lose Pete in free agency. One less option to replace him first. I'm not so sure Vientos will ever be a glove guy, but okay. So that's worst case scenario. And then to add cherry on top, Roberts Jr. comes here. Robert Jr., not Roberts, Robert Jr. You got to get make sure you, it's always like that tricky. It's a weird thing, but Robert Jr. comes here and he's Jose Siri bad, or he's Tyrone Taylor bad for $20 million. You could walk away from this for a $2 million buyout any of the next 2 years. And for those that are saying he's overpaid, do you realize the guy out in San Francisco that nearly tied the game, Lee, is making $18 million? You realize Harrison Bader last year playing center field with no bat made $10.5 million? Do you realize what it costs to get to pay for talent or any kind of offensive or glove? Good players make minimum $15 to $20 million, even if they're not great players. The cost of athletes has gone up. It's not just the cost of eggs and beef that have gone up. The cost of athletes have gone up. The bar has been raised. I don't think $20 million for what Luis Robert Jr. can be, which is Pete Crow Armstrong. You don't believe me? He had maybe it wasn't as good as what Armstrong's doing, and Armstrong might have a better glove, but very similar. Strikes out a ton, power guy, good glove. He was a 5-WAR player, according to Baseball Reference in 2023. Armstrong will probably be a 7-WAR player, a 6.5-WAR player this year. Not that far off. It's not that crazy. I do this deal if it's just straight up. If it starts adding into, you know, maybe the Sox could pick up money this year. You know, to me, I just think it makes sense. Vientos, even in a bad season, Robert Jr. is a positive WAR player. Vientos is a negative WAR player. Vientos' whole baseball existence is predicated on the kind of offensive player you saw last summer. Hitting home runs, hitting in the clutch, hitting big, and putting him in a spot where his defense is mitigated. Which you can do to a certain degree at third base, and to a certain degree of first base. But you even see with Pete Alonso in scoops. First base has some, especially with Lindor at short with his throws. First base, you need somebody who's a little more adept at having soft hands. I'm not sure Vientos is that guy. Now, he's worked hard. He's done everything he's asked. But if you look at Vientos outside of that stretch of, you know, 80 to 90 games last year, 3 months, you want to say the 111 games, his big league career has been abysmal. His big league career outside of the 3-win player he was last summer, starting in about June, he didn't even really give you the full year, he is a negative 2 WAR for his career. That's what he is. And the only reason he's a positive in his career is because of one season. Not the first guy to have a one-hit wonder. It's throughout the history of baseball, whatever decade, whatever era, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, turn of the century, go back into the 30s and 40s, there's one-hit wonders all littered all over the baseball reference page. All over. You just get a dart and you could throw it and find it. You're telling me You have to give up something to get something. You have to take a risk. You cannot go to zero risk in this business. You are not willing to give a one-dimensional player that has a long history of not being a big leaguer on his resume for a guy that has a longer history of being a very good elite center fielder at a premium position big leaguer. You're not willing to take that risk because of what? Because of last postseason? Because you're afraid that he's going to break out in Chicago? Maybe that's what he needs to break out. Maybe this place ain't for him. Now, the other thing that people could say is maybe the trade deadline's been hanging over his head. Maybe there's a lot of different things. I don't see Vientos sticking around here. I mean, by the way, last winter, myself included, there was real conversation and there was real debate and there's been talk that it was actually real from a Mets perspective, maybe more so before Alonso resigned, that they were looking at Bregman. That doesn't sound like a team that was married to Vientos at third base. The guy didn't even make the club out of spring training last year. They've never been sold on him. So, you know, to me, this makes a ton of sense. It's a risk. I don't know enough about the kid's makeup in Chicago on a lot of fronts to say I'm 100% sold. There's red flags. But if the Mets make this kind of deal and they make it just like this without giving up prospect capital, I don't even know if the Sox have much to throw in terms of bullpen help. You know, there's only so many bullpen spots you have here, and the Mets need it more for a higher leverage guy. To me, that's not such a bad deal. So anyway, let's take a quick break. Final segment, wrap up. Bullpen. What do I see out of the bullpen? I'll propose a couple of ideas I have right after this.
The right-hander comes set. The pitch is caught on and missed. It's history for Ryan Helsley. His 49th save, and the Cardinals have beaten the Giants 6-3.
All right, we're back. Final segment here. Big week, like I said, for David Stearns. Mets bullpen starting to come into place. They need, I think, two more arms. For the reason as follows. First of all, I'm not convinced that they wouldn't send Brazenbaum down. He has options. And get more of a veteran option. I think that they need, especially like tonight, where they're going into the game, no Diaz probably, no Garrett, who are on back-to-back. They need the drop-off to be potentially on those nights not to be as great. I like Beltran. Rico Beltran. I'm thinking way back. I like Garcia, but I'm not so sure that, he's a scrap heap guy that I want to put all my eggs in a scrap heap basket. Stanek concerns me. Buto, in a lot of ways, concerns me, though he pitched well last night. So, and how does he, on back-to-backs and stuff, how does he handle that? So I think that the Mets need a couple of arms. They need an arm in the right-handed mold of maybe what they got with Soto from the left side. And I still say, can they get a second closer? Now, John Heyman yesterday tweeted out some names that he's heard are available and that are somewhat connected potentially to the Mets on some of them. Now, you know the big names, the Duran out of Minnesota, Clause, Bednar. These are closers that have some control and are going to be very expensive. I don't know if the Mets go that route. I don't think they're going to rip their prospect capital away because I don't think those teams with that kind of cost-controlled asset, knowing that teams in the postseason, all of them, are going to need the ninth inning, there's a value in that. Maybe not the same value as getting a starting pitcher in. But if you told me middle starting pitcher, middle reliever, closer, elite closer, where do they rank in terms of what I could get in capital? I don't think the closer, the elite closer, that's cost-controlled, is that much different than the elite starting pitcher. It's the next rung down, but it's not, the gap is not as big as people think. Some of the other names, the Dennis Santanas, the Kitteridge out of Baltimore, Halverson, out of Colorado. Finnegan, a kind of a poor man's closer out of D.C. It sounds like that right now teams like, hey, I'll take it off of you for a salary dump. I'm not sure he's that much different than a Santana. Pierce Johnson and Raul Iglesias out of Atlanta. I'm not so sure Atlanta is the kind of team. They look to me a lot of 2023 Met in them that they're going to trade somebody. they're going to trade somebody where they get something and that maybe they're ready to move on from them. Maybe, you know, the Mets, it was the contract with Scherzer and Verlander. Maybe that's Iglesias. I don't know if another pitcher would, you know, that they could potentially use falls into that. Now, I'm going to look real quick here, and I should have done it during the break. Pierce Johnson, is he a free? He might be a free agent. So maybe he's a guy that, no, I mean, they have a $7 million team option. There's a value to that. I don't see them trying. So I think Atlanta thinks they're going to contend next year, and I don't expect anything less. So I don't take that as serious. You also have, so you have a couple of closers. There's Kenley Jansen, who's not terrible. I would actually accept that on the cheap. But the real name, and I think you could bundle and solve a couple of problems, ironically, with a former friend and maybe a former top prospect. There's three guys out of the Cardinals bullpen, one that's not mentioned on the Heyman tweet, two that are, Ryan Helsley, Phil Maton, and Steven Matz. And if you could bring those three guys in, and I look at, and I was doing some research, you don't see a lot of what the Cardinals need, because the Cardinals have been one of these teams that kind of been hanging around the race probably more than people expected in a year where they weren't expected to contend. You look at their farm system, and you look at their big league pitching situation. They need pitching. They need pitching badly. I mean, their number two prospect is Quinn Matthews, a lefty pitcher. And then you have Tink Hentz down at number seven, Tekoa Robey. They could probably use more pitching. And I mean, look, I don't know where their, you know, Cardinals farm system. What is the Cardinals farm system ranked? Let's see here. You know, they're a mid-teens team. So they need, I knew they were down there. I didn't know how bad it was. They're at 18. You know, they're 18 or so. So they could use a lot. And the Mets have guys. And the Mets are going to have to maybe start to think. And I'm not saying you give up these kind of guys for a rental reliever. But a Ryan Clifford, does he even fit with Pete potentially? Is he even an out? You know, you have Soto in the corner. You have Nimmo in the corner. You have Pete at first. Where does a Ryan Clifford fit? Maybe DH? Go back there. You have Jacob Reimer, you have Jesus Baez, third baseman, you have A.J. Ewing. If you want to go down, Blade Tidwell, there's an arm maybe. Nate Dome down lower end at the bottom of the rung. You know, what do they think about a Jonathan Pintaro who they had up for a hot minute? Jeremy Rodriguez, you know, middle infielder, you know, Marco Vargas, Boston Barlow. These are names that, you know, I think the Mets, for a Helsley, they're going to have to probably give up something in the 10 to 15 range in prospects, at least. It's possible they're going to have to give a top 10 at the bottom of the top 10 to get Helsley, excuse me. That's, you know, and I think the Maton and Matt's part kind of is the Mets taking on some salary there at the end of the year. Now, why I say, you know, Maton is obvious. Maton could come in, I think he's better than Brazenbaum. And he's a veteran, and I think part of what you saw last year was he was miscast as a setup guy in the eighth inning. He was probably a guy that's a sixth or seventh inning guy, a guy that you could bring in when you're down to keep the game close. I think they miscast him a little bit, but he's a good pitcher. Helsley would be, you know, he's in, you're renting him, he's your eighth inning guy. He could certainly back up Diaz. You can mix and match them in big spots in October. There's a lot you can do there, a lot you can do there. And Matz, I think Steven Matz, and he's a little bit, not to the level of Gregory Soto, but he gets lefties out. He seems to have found a bit of a home as a reliever, but with the situation with the starting pitchers and sometimes them not going deep, he's a guy that could probably go two innings, three innings, potentially at this point. Now, the thing about Helsley that's interesting is that right-handed batters have hit him hard this year. And he's like reverse splits for his career, and maybe that's just an anomaly for his career. That's not the case. There has been no split issues here, so maybe there was just. I know he was struggling early in the year; could have been a bad patch. I think out of all the closers, you know, let's say Jansen might be the most achievable, but who knows if even Anaheim, you know, those guys over there with the owner, they like to pretend they're contenders and hold on to guys. Who knows what they're going to do? You know, that to me is the most realistic guy. I mean, any of the other names, and again, I'm going to take the Clauses and Durans out of it because I just think they're too embedded. I think they're going to be too expensive. The Kitteridges, you know, Smith out of Cleveland, they're all good. I don't know if that's going to move the needle with the second closer situation. Now, if the Mets walk away with a decent setup guy, and they don't have a sure thing ninth inning, and they got to still go with a mix of Stanek and, you know, maybe Soto against lefties or Rayleigh, I'll live with that on the days that Diaz can't pitch. It's not the end of the world. You're not going to rip up the farm system for that kind of luxury. And I'm not, and this was validated. I think it was Martino or Heyman. I can't remember. I'm not here to worry about Diaz's free agency and bringing a controllable closer to tell Diaz to take a hike in the offseason and get leverage. That's going to be a much more detailed conversation once the season's over. I already have some thoughts on that. I also don't want to rip up the prospects for rental relievers at a high level. So there's a balance here. I think Helsley is a guy that you might be able to have your cake and eat it too, and the pain of the prospect capital might not be as bad as you think. Now, are the Phillies in on him? Are they hot in on him? You know, that's the other thing. When you have a guy like Dombrowski there, are the Yankees in on him? What is the competition for Helsley? Because that plays into it, too. You know, who's willing to go to that next level? You keep hearing that a lot of teams like the Mets pitching. Now, as far as some of the rumblings about Miami, I love Alcantara? I loved Alcantara more at the beginning of the year. Post-Tommy John, he's struggled. I mean, he's got an ERA of over 6. That doesn't mean I'm ready to give up on him at age 29 with a reasonable contract. But, and that reasonable contract, unless Miami's really broke ass, excuse my language, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't say that word. That's not what it is. But if they're really that broke, forgive it, bleep it out. If they're really that broke, geez, we're at a bad point here. I wonder if a Ronnie Henriquez, I'm not as big on Bender or Forche. I mean, they, to me, are very Brazenbonish. Edward Cabrera, good arm, 27 years old, starter. What's the health situation? There's been some red lights on health there. I think it's going to be really expensive. You're going to get taxed within the division. Bendix needs these assets to build his team. They're starting to play better, the Marlins. Maybe they feel like, you know, with Alcantara next year, they could be in the mix for a wild card spot with their payroll. I don't know if I believe that much is going to come out of that. I really don't. But that's just me speculating. So, you know, my target is, can they get, I think Helsley and Maton are too reasonable. And the throw mats on the peripheral there are kind of like where there could be a match there. That farm system needs a jolt. Anything the Mets give from 10 down to 20, 25 could help them. And if you have to give up on a lower top 10 prospect, that's going to help the Cardinals. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. That's mine. No information, no rumors, but keep an eye out for that. But that's where I'm looking to go. But if you told me right now, forget the Vientos Robert Jr. scenario, put that aside. Let's say the offense stays the same. The Mets can go out, get themselves something along the lines of a Maton and a Helsley, or a Maton and another good bullpen arm. I'd go to battle with that. And then you have your variability of the kids at the bottom of the lineup. You maybe get to see what a Vientos and a Mauricio and a Beatty and an Alvarez could do as you get to the deeper end of the pool. It'll allow you to do better decision-making this offseason. And then you get, you know, the top prospects continue to play, the Benj, the Jet Williams. Both of those guys are really exciting. It'll be interesting to see if they could push their way into the offensive conversation. I think outside of talking about Pete Alonso and his contract, Mets are in a really decent spot offensively. It's the pitching, the starting pitching, and the bullpen, which they haven't really been able to develop anything of significance. That is a bigger conversation, a bigger problem. So anyway, we talked a lot. We got to go. This is the kickoff to a big week. I said we were working on some stuff. I'm going to see what I could do in terms of having an interactive Twitter spaces with you guys at some point on deadline day. I don't have that vetted out yet. I'm going to start working on that as soon as I get off the air here. I promise we'll have something interactive. We will also have a show to kind of, you know, talk about the deadline and talk about the path forward. And then, you know what, a couple of late-night games, some of the last late-night games of the year, and then an early start on Wednesday and then a day off. So much-needed trade deadline day off. So a lot of baseball this week. This is baseball season. This is baseball season for baseball. This is baseball season for the front office. And away we go. All right, that's it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks for the Fan Sided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. Get your week kicked off here with Talking Mets. Hope you enjoyed it. Till next time, take care, everybody.